USA versus just Mr. Walrath.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Jim Walrath. I am appearing here for Anthony Dismuke. I know this appears to be a day when the Begay case is all the focus of attention. I'm going to try to, my goal in this argument is to discuss Begay at the outset. In other words, start at the back of my brief and talk about sentencing for a second. But my goal is to make the Begay issue here very short and get back to the search issue. And the reason I think this Court can look in this particular case, Mr. Dismuke's case, at the sentencing issue and whether he was properly sentenced as an armed career criminal and look at this issue very quickly is that, as I pointed out, as is pointed out in my reply brief, but was also an issue that I raised earlier in terms of whether the offense is a purposeful crime under Begay, the actual charge against my client, even though the Wisconsin statute for fleeing an officer requires that the conduct be conducted knowingly, the actual charge that was filed against my client under the complaint did not use this the element of intent. And the document itself is found at appendix page 45.
But once he pleads guilty to the offense, he's waived, I think, complaints like whether the charge included knowingly or not.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, especially under Wisconsin.
It's about gross. I mean, look, you plead guilty, you waive defenses.
No, I'm not talking about whether, I'm not asserting, although I pointed out in my footnote in my brief, that actually the way it was structured, he actually was not convicted of a statutory offense.
But it's too late for that.
But that's not my argument, that he wasn't convicted of a statutory offense. My argument is the only premise on which this court can say there was a conviction, and by looking at what that conviction was, by the way, under United States versus Newbern from this court, the court can look at the charging document, not just the statute. And when it looks at that charging document, it sees that intent, purposefulness, was not made part of what he pleaded guilty to. Now, we don't have, unlike some of the other apparently cases that are before the court today, there's no plea colloquy, there's no other way of determining for some reason that what he was saying he was guilty of was a purposeful or knowledgeable offense. That just can't be determined on the basis of any document or record in this case. By the way, if the court, I didn't put it in my brief, but the way that the complaint and the judgment of conviction became part of the record in this case in the very first place was because prior to trial, the government filed a notice of intent to impeach the defendant were he to testify, and as part of that notice, they attached, and it became part of the record, the complaint and the judgment of conviction. I just didn't want this court to worry that somehow we were referring to a stranger document that was not part of this case. So in my attempt, or my goal to make this a very direct and distinguishing aspect for Mr. Dismuke as compared to perhaps many of the other cases before the court today, my point is this is an unusual case. The Dismuke case, at least as I put the argument to the court today, does not really call for a statement of a rule of law or a broad pronouncement on the whole Begay issue. However, if the court does not agree with my position relating to the fact that he was not charged with a purposeful crime, the fact is he was charged under one of the divisible forms of fleeing in Wisconsin, which doesn't carry any aspect of endangerment. Spells case, although definitely relevant in my view, to reviewing the whole universe here of how to deal with Begay as it relates to fleeing or eluding statutes, the Smith case really doesn't decide what to do about that one of three divisible forms of fleeing in Wisconsin that really doesn't include in it any sort of risk or endangerment as part of the actual crime.
I'm not sure I read it that way. If you're focusing on that last part, nor shall the operator increase the speed of the operator's vehicle
yes.
or extinguish the lights of the vehicle,
yes.
it ends in an attempt to elude or flee. So I don't think your hypothetical of just increasing your speed by 3 miles an hour is at all likely to be seen as an attempt to elude or flee. And if it were, then maybe it would be dangerous. I mean, it's those last words in the statute that I think bring back in the intentionality and bring back in the risk of violence.
Well, but the contrast, I think, is the point that I want to stress as much as possible, and that is the beginning part of the statute, which also talks about fleeing, but then under circumstances which creates a risk of danger to the traffic officer or others. I mean,
well, it's talking about ignoring a visible or audible signal from an officer or by eluding the officer who's... It's all about the signals. And then
It's about the signals.
The second That's part the,
And then the second part
away.
Has three ways of proceeding from there. One of which is the first one, which would result in a risk of harm or danger to the traffic officer or others. But the last one is the increasing speed after receiving an audible signal. I would like to move, with the court's permission, of course, to the search issue, because a case recently came down from the court just the day before Christmas, United States versus Sims, which takes me back to my point in my brief, both main brief and reply brief, that if you have only a set of easily obtainable innocent facts that are corroborated by the police in order to get information leading to a search warrant, if you only have those kinds of facts, in this particular setting, and if time permitted, I would go into the details, but I won't, you don't have enough to establish probable cause. The Sims case is instructive because basically it lists a series of facts that are somewhat similar to what happened in the Dismook situation in terms of the officers investigating a potential felon in possession of firearms case. But Sims points out that the added important feature that led the magistrate justifiably to find probable cause was that the unnamed informant was brought before the magistrate issuing the warrant to make a determination of that word, that important word, reliability. In this search warrant, that important word, reliability, just sat there in the affidavit to get the search warrant without any explanation of, well, why reliable? Now, I understand the important point is Illinois versus Gates, and I think the way to look at this case is to go back to Gates and determine that in Gates, the government really was watching Mr. and Mrs. Gates as they went down to Florida, Mr. Gates, on a plane, and then he got off the plane and got into a car with a woman, presumably his wife, and he immediately got into a car and drove back. All facts that corroborated what they had heard from the unnamed informant. But as the Supreme Court said, those kinds of facts carry a degree of suspicion that's consistent with criminal activity. The only corroborated facts here in the Dismook search warrant was that the informant said that he was a black male. Obviously, there was no implication of criminal activity there. That he lived at 2528 West Locust Street. Again, nothing arousing suspicion. And, and that the informant himself had a sound understanding of what firearms were. But that had nothing to do with corroborating conduct by Mr. Dismuke that was suspicious or of a criminal nature. Thank you.
Mr. Cantor.
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Paul Cantor on behalf of the United States of America. I'd like to entertain any questions that you have. Otherwise, I'll just make some brief remarks. I must apologize before we even get started that I, apparently because of the holiday, I have not seen your Sims decision. I apologize for that. I'm not familiar with it. I should have been, and I apologize. But I would still maintain, as is set forth in our brief that was filed, that there was probable cause in this particular search warrant. Three independent judges have reviewed this search warrant and have concluded that there was, in fact, probable cause. I think that goes a long way to establishing two things. One, that there, in fact, was probable cause. A state court commissioner, first looked at it, found probable cause. A United States magistrate in the course of pretrial motions, and, of course, the district court judge in the review. I believe that that is strong evidence that there was probable cause. But in conjunction with that, or in addition to that, certainly, when we have three independent judicial officers passing on this particular affidavit and finding probable cause, there must be, I would argue, a conclusion that the executing officer relied in good faith on a search warrant that there was probable cause. I'm not sure what more I can add to that argument. With regard to the fleeing, I respectfully disagree with counsel. I think the Spells decision is dispositive of this particular crime. Your Honor, you anticipated the arguments that I would have made. The requirement that is set forth at the end of the statute that the increased speed or the turning off the lights be done with the purpose of eluding arrest or eluding the officer certainly is the requisite mental state that makes this a violent offense. Certainly the risk that is presented, possible risk that is presented, that's redundant. The risk that is presented to police officers and civilians is clear. It is purposeful. It is certainly aggressive. And in its context, depending on its context, it certainly can be a violent act. Spells addressed all of those things, and I don't believe that there's more than that needs to be said.
The redundancy isn't your fault. It's the ACCA and the guideline that talk about serious potential risk, and I'm not sure what work all of those words are doing.
But if there are questions.
Just to confirm that the record does reflect that the defendant was convicted of this particular form of the fleeing offense because the statute does have alternate modes of commission.
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cantor.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.